starts to scream. Andy Moan, my whoa, Andy whoa, Silver Scream, can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Anna von Mertens. Her show Elements and Objects is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery through April 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Anna.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
It's funny having you on Zoom. I haven't done a Zoom one for a while, but the last time I interviewed you was around the pandemic, and your show was it was all emojis. You had this kind of revelation, I think, with your daughter about the emoji and its power, and you made a big art show out of it. So just remind people what that was about, and then we'll talk about the new work.
Well, like you said, it was really my daughter's attention to this world of emojis that steered my attention towards it. And it's a world that's easy to dismiss, that we sort of have, that we, you know, create with our thumbs. And it's often a missive that's sort of sent out and sort of quickly forgotten. And so to steer more attention towards that world, towards the digital world, that is trying to grab at our attention and give it some real devoted attention through my hand rendering, through my drawing of these emojis into patterns and of grids, it's to see what's there, to see what's in that digital world, and to make that digital world more tangible and to recognize how it's very much a part of our life.
So you not only organized them, but you painted them by hand and made them more kind of luxurious, right? More high resolution.
Yeah, and luxurious is a great word, because I almost luxuriate in the details of emojis. Mm-hmm. They're so, once you really zoom in and see what level of details there, they are sort of gorgeous in their specificity and lusciousness. And so, yes, I render them in colored pencils, but which blend beautifully and sort of really respond well to all the detail that's there. And for this series, I draw them on black paper, so they're quite vivid in the way that they're pronounced. And I sort of animate them, as it were, referencing, I come from a quilt making background. And so I use pattern, I use repetition to create these sort of emoji quilts, as it were, in these compositions of repetition, and carefully hand render them to sort of bring forward their materiality. So, and which is sort of, again, funny that I am speaking to materiality about the digital world, but I think there's a real danger in sort of cordoning off the digital world as separate from our own, and recognizing how the digital world and the physical world are very much part of the same ecosystem, as it were, is an important sort of shift of approach.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody goes into Liz Leach in the next 2 months, they're going to see two types of work. The emojis, which are these colored drawings arranged in patterns on black paper in black frames, and then there are these photo, what do you call those things, where you put something on photographic paper and let the light,
right, the cyanotypes, like, or just simply a sun print. So as you enter the gallery, on the left, as you say, will be these drawings on black paper of, and they're called 100 emojis. So each drawing is 100 emojis arranged in pattern. And then on the right are these sort of different, also on black paper, also highly detailed drawings, but their origins are these sun prints. So, and there's a more, and quite simply, we can sort of say to the left is sort of the digital world. And to the right, I'm starting to think about the cosmos. Another realm, another sort of very distant realm that I try to pull close through this careful rendering. Mm-hmm. And if I can, I'll walk you through. There's quite a system to how those, I call them the metals drawing, because I actually use metallic gold and metallic silver pencils on black paper to create that series. And so I'll just walk you through for those cosmic drawings. I was interested. I got a Smithsonian fellowship to work at to hang around astrophysicists at the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory. And in learning about our cosmos and learning about its structuring forces, I learned about literally the fabrication of elements in the heart of stars, and learning how gold itself is forged these heavier metals in the death of stars in these very energetic cosmic events was fascinating, but all the more fascinating to think that the gold that, you know, that the rings on our fingers and the chains that lie against our skin, the necklaces and bracelets on our wrists, that that gold is fabricated in these cosmic events and through the death of stars, that dust is projected out into the universe. And then slowly, as our planet formed, was gathered in the heart of our planet. And to think, so this sort of cliche that we are stardust, we are literally stardust. And this, these pieces of jewelry that we form into meeting and often are emblematic of relationships between humans, that is also stardust. And so I, for these metallic drawings, I arranged tangles of jewelry that I borrowed from friends onto sun-sensitive paper and created this pattern that references these cosmic events. And those sun prints I used as a basis for these very detailed, again, drawings in metallic pencils. And
So if you're looking at one, it's a black background with a gold, it kind of looks like gold smoke. There's a, you know, like a ball of smoke. It's very 3D. And then there are like chain patterns around the edges, and that's jewelry. So you put the jewelry down, let the light hit the photographic paper, maybe move the jewelry a little bit to get kind of smeared.
Well, I love that that smokiness, that is exactly that quality. What actually, because it's a three-dimensional object, sunlight slips underneath, so it creates that smokiness. So these three-dimensional objects are sort of drifting into shadow because sunlight is sort of creeping around the edges of the shadow. So it is both, right. So the chains actually become transformed into almost a dotted line because only part of the chain is in contact with the sun-sensitive paper and part lifts up. So you get this slippage into shadow. And that is so much what the piece is about. That is these contact points and then these slippages away, because we are connected with, you know, the cosmos. We are all connected. There is an interconnectedness with us in the cosmos, and yet there is a very much an absence. So it's both presence and loss. And this work is very much thinking of the cosmos, but thinking about relationships and how those we love are always close and with us, and yet there is absence and loss that is very much a part of those relationships as well. And one of the very touching parts of this, as I said, I borrowed pieces of jewelry from friends, and with each loan, you know, as each object was handed over to me, a story unsolicited was just told of, oh, my, you know, my grandfather gave this to my grandmother. When she died, he gave it to me. And it is really a link of generations and relationships. And so to me, this work is quite touching, how these objects represent the connection between ourselves and our loved ones.
Was the image left by the, you know, the negative, was that gold, or did you color it in gold?
Exactly, I colored it in gold. So it just left a pattern. So wherever the gold was in touch with the paper, the sun couldn't make that chemical reaction. So all those areas of gold represent contact points. And then that smokiness, that quality that you describe, is that slippage into shadow where the sunlight sort of creeped around the edge of the object and dissolved the shadow beneath it. So, and it's also beautiful, right, that this distant sun was the creator of this image that I then went and hand rendered.
Were you coloring in gold on white?
So no, and that was partly, well, one, I wanted to reference the cosmos and to reference literally space through that black paper. But part of it was just a material reaction. That metallic gold pencil just glides on black paper just like butter. And it is just a delight to work with. So there was a way that the surface and the tool I used had this relationship that just wanted to be there. So, which is quite different on white paper. Gold just sort of almost disappears. It lacks the presence. So I knew that the black paper was the way to really bring that forward.
What kind of gold pen are you talking about?
Well, I love it. It's just, you know, why get any fancier than Prismacolor? They are the best. They have that just perfect amount of
the
wax in them.
Middle school girls use.
It is real. It is real. You mentioned, you know, at the beginning of our discussion that my daughter sort of, her fascination with emojis drew my fascination to them. And guess what? Her, you know, holding a colored pencil in her hand was like, wait a minute, these blend amazingly well. I mean, they just, they're again that wax base. They just you can really almost play on the surface like a painting. You can blend right on the surface of the paper and really get all that vividness that you want. So yep, why no need to invent anything new.
Do you, when the ones that are silver is and they're more kind of formal, the chains are more organized. Yeah. What was the medium there?
Right. So that is just a silver Prismacolor. So also, so just using gold and silver Prismacolor and then using the shades of gray to create that shadowy smokiness. And there, yes, I mean, each of these drawings represents a cosmic event. So there, these mid-range stars, it represents a planetary nebula. So in the death of a star, how these layers are shed and what remains is this white dwarf dense star at its center. So again, very abstract, but evoking these sort of shedding layers through these circles of chains as part of the composition.
Hmm. Did you know all this before you met with the scientists?
No, I did not at all. I mean, and it was really... So my fellowship there was to study dark matter as a structuring force in the cosmos. And and that is what I met with my advisor about. But then it was like, I sort of like a student cramming, like if I'm going to meet with this astrophysicist, I need to like know what my stuff. So it was basically like astronomy 101. I was like, okay, wait. And then when you get in there, you're like, wait, how are the elements formed? And there's this fascinating, that with nuclear fusion at the heart of a star, you can go all the way up to iron and create those elements can be forged in the heart of stars. But once you get to iron, that balance of the radiating pressure of the heat, outward with gravity forcing in, it collapses, but gravity wins. And so any elements, you can't forge heavier elements in stars, only through the energetic death of stars and literally the collision of stars, like of two neutron stars, that's when you get these heavy elements formed. Mm. So to know that this drama, this gold, I'm even looking right now at a simple gold band around my finger, which it was my grandmother's wedding ring. And, and she wore it for decades and now it's on my hand. And to think that gold came from the collision of two neutron stars is almost like science fiction. But again, there's fascination and delight in knowing that, but also this just awe-inspiring connection of all things. How could, just that knowledge, you gain such perspective and appreciation and reverence for these miraculous everyday things around us.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Anna von Mertens. Her show Elements and Objects is on now at Elizabeth Leach Gallery through April 27th. Anna, I'm always amazed, like, how did scientists know what the moon was made of before they ever went there and, took samples? How do they know what stars are made of?
Right. I mean, that's what's also fascinating, right? Is that we know all this just by through light, through wavelengths. And mm-hmm. And so, I can't speak as an expert, but that the fact that we can read a light's spectrum and through the patterns present in that spectrum, in the spectra that they read, that through that is often the elemental components, how that, so part of that information is present. But right, isn't that this the most beautiful thing, that just light itself tells us, mm-hmm. and patterns of light and interruptions of light, that is what we build knowledge out of, which is truly astounding.
Just spectrometry has existed, even a couple of hundred years ago. They were figuring this out.
Right. They would burn elements in the laboratory and see these spectral patterns. And then they would read the spectral patterns of starlight, they could match that to the elements they, observed in the laboratory. Mm. And, what's fascinating, another project that I'm working on very actively right now is that, obviously I have a deep science interest, and I'm delighted that a book project that I'm have developed on astronomer Henrietta Leavitt will be released by MIT Press this fall in September. So I'm writing a book on her work and her life, but also her skill and attention and how her attention, you know, her, she made a discovery that launched modern cosmology quite literally, because her discovery allowed us to measure the distance of faraway stars for the first mm-hmm. time. So this three-dimensional understanding of the universe was allowed. But I just thought of this in our conversation because her colleague at Harvard College Observatory, Annie Jem Cannon, was analyzing the spectra of stars. But she was looking at patterns, and they did not know the significance of those patterns, but they had faith that just, you know, observing them and categorizing them was a way to reach an understanding. And sure enough, that was the path towards understanding how, you know, what fuels a star's light. But how interesting, right? That just pattern and pattern recognition was what arrived them there. And, you know, I love thinking of these connections, you know, that you were talked about building, you know, patterns through emojis, and where do we find patterns in our life, and how do we create pattern and repetition, and how can that produce meaning, and the ways that these two disciplines are very much in a line.
What was her name, and when did she live?
The book I'm writing is on Henrietta Leavitt, and she lived 1868 to 1921. And she worked on the magnitude of stars, trying to gauge their brightness, not a simple task when it's recorded on photographic glass plates, which was a very new and unreliable technology. So she had to navigate this technology to build her understanding. And, you know, in her time, there were just lights in the night sky. There was no sense of depth to the stars, no ability to know where we were in space, and her finding facilitated that understanding. So it's been a real joy to go into depth and tell her story. But like I said, it's deeply relevant to this in scientific significance, but also how these small acts of attention and through repetition, we build meaning, we build discovery in our own lives. So yes, that has been a project of deep intensity for me for the past few years.
Mm-hmm. So the other half of your show, Liz Leach, is called 100 Objects, and mm-hmm. it's these drawings of emojis on black paper. They're colored pencil drawings. So each one is individually done, right? You're not cut and paste here?
Yes, very individually done. And that was part of the delight, is that, I mean, I had a rule that I would cover the rest of the paper and only focus on what I was drawing that one day. And so I would draw these objects again and again and again, but newly. So never sort of referencing what I'd done the previous day. And that experiencing these drawings in person, one thing that is quite fun is that from a distance, they look like they were digitally produced. And mm-hmm. as you draw, there's a sort of a barrier that when you come close enough, you realize how deeply individualized it sort of breaks apart this seamlessness. And you see the individual mark making, you see how each object is different from the last. And, you know, so true to the actions we take in our lives, that we take the same actions, a daily action that repeats over time, but each one is both a repetition of that act and completely new. So yes, just the quality of hand drawing adds a new element to these objects. And I deliberately focused on the objects on our phones. So I went to the objects category in emojis, and I like that I said emotion, but in mm-hmm. emojis, and you know, and it's sort of like, what is the function? There's sort of this moralist digital realm, and so again, trying to anchor, bring it into the physical world, and these sort of, what is the function of these objects? So I'm looking at an image of one of the drawings here, and you know, there's safety pins, and there's a needle and thread, and there's a wedding ring, and a Band-Aid, and there's sort of they have these actions of sort of mending and tending, and there's sort of a care, you know, but there's also so you can sort of create a narrative through the objects. But again, there's sort of, on the phone, they don't, I think moralist is that right word. They don't feel anchored or tied or tethered. And here I'm trying to sort of pull that realm close, because I think there's quite a danger in feeling that the digital world is separate from the physical world. Through both sort of responsibility that we take in the digital world, but also quite literally in the energy that you know, that our phones are an ecosystem. There is an enormous amount of material resources and energy that physically support this world. And so to pretend it is sort of not tied into this ecosystem that is our planet is harmful in a quite literal way.
Mm-hmm. So you organize 100 emojis. They're kind of diagonal. So the longest line is across the middle from the bottom left to the top right. And it's the needle and thread.
Yes, yes.
And then the pattern changes, you know, wedding looks like a diamond ring, then a safety pin, then a toothbrush. As you go to the top left corner, there are less and less of them. And you talked about quilting. Like, why does this kind of pattern relate to quilting?
Well, quilt construction, which is my background, is interesting, right? That you take an individual unit, like a square or a triangle, that is that thing, but then when you repeat it, it activates that shape in a completely new way. So partly here, I'm trying to activate these objects and give them a sort of vibrancy in a life that through pattern and repetition. And so the one that you're talking about now is very much based on these diagonals. And you'll notice that each, there's the same amount of each item. So like that needle and thread repeats at the very top. So it is a repeating pattern. So each row repeats twice through that pattern and sort of gives it a different kind of energy. But in another, a second drawing, I quite literally reference a quilt pattern, the tumbling block quilt pattern. And here I'm creating these diamond shapes through these slanted emojis, the needle, the rings mm-hmm. of Saturn, a feather, and a paperclip. And they repeat into, they start to talk to each other. And so I love how in that drawing, the paperclip has these sort of very similar shapes to the rings of Saturn. And you think what two different worlds those are, right? That there's one out in the cosmos of dust circling a planet and another, a paperclip that we might use once and then quickly discard. And, you know, these two realms of the micro and the macro that are speaking to each other.
Do you have any part of your life that isn't affected by art?
Oh, what a lovely question. That's so interesting because I used to keep them in my, I think maybe a little more separate in that my studio was, you know, with children, there's limited studio time. So that precious, precious time in the studio, it almost felt separate and like my own thing. Mm-hmm. And more as time a little bit has opened up for me, as my children have gotten older, that that I realized like, no, that these two worlds are exactly that are interwoven, of course. And it's so much of what is important here of that attention I give to creating and crafting an object in the studio that I take that same care and attention and turn it towards the small daily tasks in my everyday life. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to study this astronomer, Henrietta Leavitt, because she, like all scientists do, needed to take an action of observing and repeat it again and again and again. And that is how she constructed meaning. That is how she constructed her discovery. And the same is true building an art object, and the same is true building a lived life. So I feel that my art practice has fed back into appreciation and gratitude and attention towards the dailiness of life. And that, of course, is where the richness of life, that's where it lives. So I really appreciate how my practice feeds back into, yeah, just even, you know, the washing of a dish or, you know, a task that you might not give as much care or, you know, or it may not be the top of your list of wish what you wish to be doing, but what else is our lives build up of but these daily acts, you know? I mean, there is the extraordinary among that, but it's recognizing how much the extraordinary lives within the ordinary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have so many different types of art. I mean, you have quilts, you have drawings, some colorful emojis. It just seems like you do whatever you want.
Well, it is interesting where I agree that these bodies of work feel wildly different at times. But what I recognize, for one thing, I can't seem to make an artwork quickly. So I seem to commit the same. There is always the presence of the hand is a uniting theme in the work. There mm-hmm. is the presence of my time and my commitment of time to making these objects. And so that, and there is, and then there's also that use of repetition and pattern, and how I often look out into visible phenomena and bring those patterns back into the work. Sometimes I create those patterns, and sometimes I pull patterns that already exist in the world into my work. So there is that unifying thread through the work of my commitment of time and attention to making these objects.
When you were drawing emojis with pencil, I could see how you'd have to put paper down so you don't smudge the one you
did
yesterday. So, but do you just have a little window where you can only see the one patch?
Exactly. So I'm just in that window, right? And so I'm in that, and it's also a wonderful beginning and end. Like I will, you know, I would always start and finish an emoji in the same sitting, and so it is this unit that builds. The other thing I'd like to point out is that colored pencil does not erase. And so the other sort of exquisite and slightly terrifying fact of these drawings is that once I began it, there was only one direction to it. There was no reversing. So whatever happened over that span of time, you know, was what the drawing became. And so I will say that I never made some egregious, the drawing is now ruined, but I did, any mark I put on that paper was stayed on that paper. So that was also really, it made you very present, because you couldn't get essentially lazy or know like, it doesn't really matter if I'm off today. Like when I sat down, it was like, whatever mark you put on this paper stays on this paper. So let's go.
The sprinkles on the gold cupcakes are all in the same place. So
yes, exactly.
How long did a cupcake take?
I love that. How long did a cupcake take? I think I'm trying to think, depending on the complexity of the emoji, it generally took me 1 to up to 3 hours to draw. I mean, there is an underappreciated, you know, I think that's so fascinating. So I would magnify, of course, I would pull up the emoji into full detail. And I was just shocked at the level of detail and gloss and shine and all the details there. I mean, a toilet plunger is one of the emojis I draw again and again and again. And it's just luscious. And it's that sort of plastic shine on that sort of classic orange plunger style. But
If it wasn't 2 millimeters wide, if it was blown up, it would actually have some detail on the front.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is amazing how much detail is present. And certainly there is a metaphor for you that when you pay attention, you realize what the layers of richness that are there. I remember, I am not a very good meditator, but I suppose I have this meditative practice. This is as close as I get to meditation. But I remember, someone who meditated deeply was saying that the sounds of their refrigerator felt just like infinitely complex and fascinating. And obviously they were a very advanced meditator because they could get there. But I feel that same way where it's like you sit down and it's like, all right, well, how does that highlight pull? Or how do I craft that shine across that toilet plunger? How do I create that? And that is the way that I can, it harnesses my focus and I stay with it. And what I do find when you pay attention to something, it is deeply satisfying.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Anna von Mertens. Her show Elements and Objects is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery through April 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again by Zoom, Anna.
Oh, it was such a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for having me.
Silver stream, can't tell them apart at all.